On this episode of Brad and Will, we have a lot of topics to talk about, but the Rockets have won 4 of the last 7 games, so you guys stay tuned. You're going to enjoy these conversations. All right, and welcome back to another episode of the Brad and Will Show. I'm your first host, as always, Will. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Bias Houston. Over there, we do all the different post-game spaces, the different content aggregation, anything you need as far as Houston sports, Houston Rockets content goes. We got you covered over there. I'll quickly shout out Brad and Will on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube as well. As always, really appreciate you guys showing the amount of support and love on those platforms. Continue to like, comment, and subscribe, and I'll pass off to Brad.
Yeah, as always, I'm your other host, Brad. You can catch me on Instagram or Twitter at BradoNBA. All your favorite stats, highlights. I got you covered there. And we have a fun list of topics today. Will, he gave us this nice outline, so I'm going to give him the task of facilitating us for today. So go ahead, brother.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the Golden State Warriors, Houston. I'm not sorry, the Golden State Warriors. The Philadelphia 76ers. I got the Warriors on my brain. The Philadelphia 76ers and Houston Rockets game. James Harden's return to Houston as the first time as a Philadelphia 76er. This is not his first time coming back, but first time as a Sixer. This is a game that I think everybody was kind of had on their ballots for this season. It was a game that before the season even started, I already bought my tickets to because I knew I was going to want to see James Harden return to Toyota Center. This is my first time seeing him in person since he's left. So definitely had to go to that game. There's a lot of people there. Great game. And like it turned out that it was actually like one of the, probably in my opinion, the best game this season. It went to double OT. Rockets got the win, obviously. Guys had good games. We saw a glimpse of kind of what this team could be in the future. So we're just going to talk about that real quick. But before we kind of started diving into like the nitty gritty of each individual player, the different, parts of the game, I did want to talk about really quickly to start. Just have you noticed the trend, Brad, that like these guys get up for like the important games? Have you noticed that?
Yeah. And it started when, the Hawks, they got really, what's the word I want to use? They started just doing these weird tactics.
It was showboating.
Hitting Bari on the head. Trae Young hit a three, and they were, just starting to dance and stuff like that. And the Rockets were having none of that, and they came out and won that game. And then in the next instance that you're probably thinking about is Jalen Green and Devin Booker. They started talking mess to each other back and forth. And boom, next thing you know, Jalen has his best quarter of his career, 20 points. And then they end up messing around and win that game. Then you got James Harden coming back to Houston for the first time as a Philadelphia 76er, as you said. And then what happens? They go out there and win. So, as you mentioned, they get out for these games. They just need a little bit to get pumped up. And, the results are, carried over from there. But you'd like to see that every game. But what do you think?
No, I think you hit the head on the nail. It's more of how can we get these guys to bring this level of intensity and energy every single night. I think Vader – in the post-game space last night made a really good point. That's like, the all-time greats, the Michael George, the Kobe's, the Bronze, these guys, they'll fabricate a reason like in their head to like lock in on the game, right? Like you could look at Kobe the wrong way, you could look at Jordan the wrong way, and he's like, all right, I'm taking it at you tonight. And so like we see that when they do get that kind of that stimulus from the opposite team. So for example, you touched on it, Brad, when DeJounte Murray was tapping Jabari Smith on the head, that's when Jabari activated. But as a matter of fact, I think that Hawks game, we might look back on that game like at the end of the season and say like that was the game that woke us up, because up until that point we were kind of like just treading along the season. It was like that game, DeJounte Murray and Trae Young coming into Houston and trying to disrespect us in our own town, that woke us up. And we, like I said, we've won 4 of the last 7 since that moment. Like when that happened, Jabari activated, Jalen activated, you touched on it, Devin Booker came, or we went to Phoenix and Devin Booker was running his mouth, Jalen Green said he wouldn't have none of that. James Harden returned to Houston, and clearly these guys, these are guys who looked up to James Harden. We talked about that they were training with him this offseason, so clearly they look up to this guy, and they were like, all right, well, you're not going to come in here and just, this is your home for about 8 years, but no, this is our home now, this is our city now, and they took it to him personally. And then I think other things we haven't talked about just yet, but like remember when Ja came to Houston, right? Jalen was going back and forth with him that whole game. Whenever Steph Curry comes to Houston or we play Steph Curry, KPJ gets up for those games. Without fail, KPJ always plays well when we play the Warriors. So, like you said, Brad, it's just about getting these guys to take that same level of intensity every game, not just the games where they have, a big matchup. But if you want to talk about anything else, we can get on to the actual game itself now.
Yeah, let's get to the game. All right. I'll let you
get off. Cool. So I think that, at least in my opinion, what kind of changed the energy of this game where I'm like, oh, we can win this one, right? Like, this is a game that we could possibly win. I think it was Tari Eason. I think that, you know, when the game was first starting, the guys, they were going back and forth. The Sixers might have been able to pull away here and there. But that second half with Tari Eason, when he just went on, like, an insane run, you know, just doing what he could, no matter what it was, whether it was, you know, grabbing rebounds. He had a bunch of steals. Yeah, man, like, I think Tari Eason changed the energy of that game. So, I want to get your thoughts on Tari Eason yesterday.
Yeah, again, the Rockets, for the fourth game in a row, despite everything we talked about, you know, they've had four really bad starts, Will. And when you have a guy like Tari Eason who could come in and change the energy of that game completely, it helps a lot. And that third quarter, Tari ended up having 11 points. I don't know how many steals he had, but it's like a steal.
I think he had three.
He had three for the game, but for that third quarter,
Specific
is when he really, like, shot out of a cannon. He was having Jose Alvarado moments. He was stealing balls in the backcourt. I promise it feels like he gets 20 offensive rebounds a game. That's just, like, how his energy is. He is, like, not a handle. If he gets a layup package or if he just starts hitting layups consistently, that kid is going to – he's going to be absurd as a basketball player. That's his one weakness, in my opinion, right now, is his layups. I don't know what's going on there, but outside of that, he was the main – focal point for the Rockets winning that game. He didn't play that much after the third. He played a little bit of the fourth. Give Silas props for, you know, putting him back in after he subbed him out in that fourth quarter. But, man, a guy like that is so perfect to have as a member of the young core. So I think he was the main reason that they won that game.
Yeah, I agree. If it was up to me, I'm giving Tari Eason the game ball from yesterday. Cause I think just his energy – effort and just, I don't know, like, I think he kind of revitalized not just us, but like Toyota Center, right? Like the crowd was into it when Tari Eason was getting steals and hustling and going all over the place. I think you touched on it, something that was really important, Brad, is that he's been struggling to finish his layups right now. And so for me, what I like about Tari Eason is we may not necessarily see a guy who's going to be necessarily a star player, but you can see the path for him being more impactful beyond just a 3-and-D player, right? Like, I don't think Tari Eason is going to be a corner sitter because he's already showing us that when this guy gets the ball in transition, he's ready to go. A lot of the offense, you know, in that second half was just Deshaun Nix getting the ball to Tari Eason and Tari Eason attacking the basket. And he was successful doing that. So, like, I think the next evolution for him is just to get more consistent at finishing around the rim. And then, I mean, if we want to start really talking about, you know, star player, if he can start making some passes off those drives, like, we can start talking about a guy who, you know, might be, has some star upside in him. So I love what I saw from Tari. So, like I said, game ball goes to him. I think he changed the energy of that game. And I'm loving what I'm seeing from Tari as far as this season goes. Need to see him get more minutes. Need to see him get more play out there than what he's getting. But we can go on to the next topic about Jalen, right? So the next thing I had on here was Jalen and his growth as a player. And kind of what I mean by that is, if you watch the Rockets last season, Jalen's rookie season, you'll notice that, like, when the games where he would have really, like, he'll be really impactful, you would see he had, like, a bunch of threes that night. And it was, like, one of the criticisms of his game was that if Jalen Green wasn't knocking down threes, he didn't have a way to impact the game, really, right? Like, he wasn't – obviously, we talked about on the show before, his playmaking has been much improved this year. But beyond that, like, he was, you know, the guy who was the best finishing through contact. You know, the mid-range game was kind of progressing along, but the main way Jalen Green scored last season really was from the beyond the arc. And yesterday, Jalen Green was 0-for-7, and I think he was, you know, probably the best player on the floor for us. And I think he had a really good game despite the fact that he was 0-for-7 from three. And that comes from the fact that he finished the game with seven assists. He had seven turnovers, I believe, but seven assists. And he was able to score by getting to the free throw line, right? Like, that's a way you can impact the game, get to the free throw line, right? So he's starting to get those free throw calls. He took 10 free throws last night, made 9 of them. He's starting to get those free throw calls. And like I said, I'm just happy to see that the guy who was viewed as, like, this one-dimensional shot chucker has shown us now, like, he can impact the games without scoring. Like, his playmaking has been real. And now he's showing us he can impact the game when his shot isn't always necessarily falling. He can still find ways to score, get a bucket. And if there's one thing I'm not concerned with Jalen Green is that his jump shot's going to come back. Like, I'm positive Jalen Green's going to be a great shooter throughout his NBA career, so we're not going to see these 0-for-7 nights that often. I mean, like I said, it gets scary when you start talking about Jalen Green. But Brad, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I was trying to find a stat because you're perfectly on the money with that. You know, when he wasn't hitting those threes last year, well, he wasn't going to do anything in that basketball game. I was going to pull up his averages in those games last year where he hit one or less threes, and it was going to be terrible. But just looking at that game yesterday, for him to go out there and put up 27 and 7 and 4 rebounds, still had a solid, efficient night, 56 true shooting percentage, without hitting a single three, 0 for 7. It just shows you the progression that we've seen from a young kid at the age of 20, and he still has so much more to grow. With him right now, it's just all consistency. He's turning into a complete basketball player. It's really happened in the last month. He's averaging 5 assists in his last 10 games, 5.1 assists to be exact. So just little things. He may be turning the ball over more, but the fact that his assist numbers are rising is a good sign. He's becoming a lot more comfortable in the pick and roll. Just pay attention to it the next time you watch. You don't even have to pay attention to it. He's getting a connection with Şengün. They have the highest rates. I want to say those two had the best connection on the team. If you want to look at a player's assist to another player, those two have the best connection. And it's just what we've been seeing from Jalen. We hope the three ball starts to fall consistently. But even if it's not, Jalen is showing now, Will, that he can go out there and still be an effective basketball player on the court. And that's what you love to see from your young player. Again, he's 20 years old. And he will become more consistent. And when he does, that's when he's really going to be a superstar in this league. So, been very impressed with Jalen, especially last night, to turn a bad shooting night into a solid game.
I think speaking of guys who really impressed us, I think KPJ was up another guy who really impressed me yesterday. Like I said, I talked in the intro about these guys taking these matchups personally, and you can tell KPJ took the James Harden matchup very personally. He was the one tasked to guard James Harden. And I mean, I'll give James Harden some leeway here. He is coming off of an injury. It was his first game back, missing a month of action. But KPJ was like, Brad, I think he tweeted out the stat this morning, right? Wasn't like 0 for 6 when KPJ was guarding, something like that? What was the stat?
Yeah, so KPJ had one block on Harden, held him to 0 for 6 from the field total, three of those in the clutch, and he was playing great defense on him the whole entire game. Just go back and watch it. Even if Harden wasn't getting off a shot, KPJ was containing. He was fighting with the pick and rolls. That was just probably the best night. Not probably. That was the best defense we've seen Kevin play all game. And it goes into the topic that we opened the show with. He's just this team. They get up for these certain games, and we saw it with the matchup with James and KPJ today.
Yeah, and I was gonna say like that was what it was for me. Is like, When like, you remember the game last season when KPJ played Steph Curry? Now, Steph Curry did go on to, like, I'm going to say he pushed off a little bit and he gamed us, right?
That was
right?
The game in Golden State, correct?
But up until that moment, remember, KPJ was playing some really good defense on Steph Curry. And this is somebody right. who, like, if we're being objective, he hasn't played the best defense this year, right? Like, he's been right. up and down. He's had some struggles. I think a lot of it with him is just lapse of focus. But, like, when he's locked in on guarding the guy in front of him, I think KPJ does a really good job of doing it. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons we won last night was KPJ took that James Harden matchup personally. And I don't know what it was. I guess he was just like, nah, I'm not going to let you score tonight, bro. And so like Brad said, 0 for 6 when he was guarding him. It felt like it was more than that, honestly. I think that's probably, like you said, Brad, that's the best thing I've seen KPJ play all season. And sure. I mean, possibly ever, bro. Like that's up there. So. You didn't have anything else you want to say about KPJ's defense? I think that was, like I said, was a huge reason we won yesterday. We can keep him moving.
Yeah, Kevin, he has been slandered this year from a defensive standpoint. I think he can play better defense. But
most definitely.
Seeing that game yesterday was a great sign. And I hope that he continues to play defense like that. I mean, James Harden is a good offensive player. He shot 4-for-19 yesterday coming off of an injury. But still, to contain James Harden, to block a James Harden step back, and to hold him to that inefficient night, is outstanding work from Kevin. So they play a bad San Antonio team on Thursday. I just want to see them carry that performance into that night. But that's all I have to say on that topic. And before we get to the next topic, I'm going to find that stat for you, that Jalen Green stat for you while we're in this podcast. So keep going.
Yeah, so we need that. But I think you kind of alluded me perfectly for the next topic of conversation, the San Antonio game, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a team that we played in preseason. We whooped them as we were supposed to in preseason. And somebody who really stood out to me in that preseason game was Alperen Şengün. I thought that he had a very complete game. It was like the offensive hub against San Antonio during the preseason. And so he's next guy I want to talk about last night. I think Şengün, so going against to the game, I expected Joel Embiid to foul Şengün out the game. And I expected him to, like, do some nasty work on us, which he did. I think he finished with, like, was it 39 points? Yeah, 39 points. And he went to the free throw line 17 times. Like, that's kind of what I expected was going to happen. But to Alperen Şengün's credit, outside of, like, the first half, that second half, especially, like, in the fourth quarter in OT period, I thought Şengün's defense was actually pretty passable, as far as what you could ask of him on Joel Embiid. He started playing with a little bit more urgency and not trying to foul out as much. I think the refs were trying their hardest to, like, make Şengün foul out and leave Embiid in the game. I think some of those calls were kind of questionable, especially when Embiid had that fifth foul. I think Embiid had fouled out a long time ago before they finally fouled him out the game. But I think Şengün, you know, is somebody who we talk about his biggest weakness, the thing that's holding him back the most, is his defense. I think Şengün played. I mean, I don't know, Brad, let me know if I'm tripping, but I think Şengün, especially like I said, in that fourth quarter in the two OT periods, I think Şengün played pretty solid defense of Joel Embiid.
Yeah, and you have to take into account that he was also in foul trouble, and he played amazing defense. He played way better defense than he did in the first quarter. First quarter, sure, he looked awful out there defensively. He fell for the old James Harden, put the hand in the cookie jar, as Matt Buller used to say. And, yeah, outside Buller. Of that, yeah, shout out to Matt Buller. But, you know, that was some of the best defense I've seen Şengün play all season. It couldn't come on a better night against Joel Embiid, the most dominant center in the NBA. So I was very impressed by his performance.
That's all I want to talk about with Şengün. Like I said, I think he struggled in other aspects of the game, but I mean, he's going to bounce back. He's going to be fine. Like, for me, it was more important to see that he, you know, when Silas trusted him to go out there and, you know, not foul out the game, he was able to, for the most part, do it. So kudos to Şengün. And then that leads me to, go ahead. You found a stat. Yeah,
Şengün, outside of the defense, I got to talk about that stat that I found yesterday. You know, on the broadcast, I saw they said, hey, Şengün just scored his 1,000th point. I didn't realize he was that close to 1,000. So instinct is to check his assist numbers, and I found out he's the youngest player in history, youngest center in history to put up 1,000 points and 200 assists. And he's a year younger than the next guy. This is how good
– Do you know who the next guy was?
Yeah, Alvin Adams is the next guy. No, it was Brad Daughtry. Brad Daughtry. You know Brad Daughtry from the Cleveland Cavs back in the day. He used to play with Mark Price. Yeah. Him, and then Alvin Adams, Bam Adebayo was fourth, and Jokic was fifth. Yeah, but Şengün was a year younger than everybody on that list, and it goes to show you, like, all the times we've complained about his minutes, and he doesn't get the looks he deserves, and it's true. It's just he's doing all this stuff at a young age, and it's truly amazing to see, despite the lack of opportunity that he's gotten as a member of the Houston Rockets, and he's only going to get better. We still haven't seen him unlock his post fade, which he was showing as an 18-year-old MVP in Turkey. I posted a clip on Twitter today. You guys can go check it out. He had a step back three in Turkey. That was pretty nasty. He has a lot more that he can add to his game. And once he does that offensively, he's going to be the full package because he can facilitate and find anybody that he wants to on the court. So the kid, the sky's the limit for him. As you mentioned, Will, I did want to end on this note. Şengün looked really good in that San Antonio game. He had 13 points, 5 rebounds, and 3 assists in that game, if I'm not mistaken. And he shot 5 or 6 from the field. That's a game where...
Was that off the dome?
Yeah, that was off the dome. We can stat check it.
Wow, that's crazy.
But that game was really fun. And I'm hoping that they go to him like that early and often against the Spurs. Because that team is awful. I mean, that's the worst team in the NBA. I thought the Rockets could be the worst team in the NBA. That San Antonio team has everybody beat. And it's not close.
Do you remember if Jakob Poeltl played in that preseason game? Did he play?
He did. Yeah, he did. Because I remember people were talking about, I would trade for Jakob Poeltl and I would start him over Şengün. And I was like, I don't know about that. In fact, I thought it was ridiculous. And then Şengün came out and did all that stuff against him that night.
Yeah, because I'll say Poeltl did play. Because I was going to say, like, I think this is going to be a matchup where I think Şengün, like that Thunder game where there was nobody who could really guard Şengün, I think Şengün could go off tomorrow. Like, I mean, not tomorrow. On Thursday when we play?
Yeah, they play on Thursday. Yeah,
I think he can go off on Thursday. Like, I don't think that I don't think Jakob can guard him. So that's pretty interesting. You said the 8th, right? Isn't that that's Josh Christopher's birthday, right?
Was it the 8th or the 7th? He might be the 8th.
I think it's the 8th. I'm looking up real quick. But it's kind of funny because last year on his birthday, that's when he played James Harden. December 8th. And he had that perfect game. He had like over 100% true shooting percentage. Like, it was something insane that night.
I think it was 117 true shooting percentage.
Something nuts, man. But I hope that, Josh is a different conversation for a different podcast, but it would be cool to see him get out there and get some burners birthday. Just continue the superstition of birthday Josh Christopher. So that was pretty interesting. But to kind of wrap the show, one thing I want to talk about was Coach Silas, right? I think Silas did a great job last night. I'll just put it like that. So I have a few complaints, not that many. I think that, one, I don't think I need to see Garrison Matthews play anymore. I think that, you know, the usage of Garrison Matthews should stay strictly to like if somebody gets hurt or if we're like in dire need of some spacing, right? Because I don't see nothing that Garrison Matthews does that KJ Martin and Tari Eason don't either already provide, or, you know, they may not provide the same level of spacing, but they're providing much more stuff than just spacing. And Garrison Matthews is literally only out there to shoot threes. He's not really playing defense. He's not really, you know, playmaking. He's just out there shooting threes. And I'll pull it up. So I want to say he didn't shoot that well yesterday. Let me look at it. In 10 minutes, yeah, he was 1 of 5. Like, I knew it wasn't good. That's in 10 minutes, which is insane. I don't need to see Garrison Matthews no more. I think Dacian Nix also had a disastrous game. I think he almost single-handedly sold us in the first half with his play. So I need to see him kind of stop playing as much. We talked about Tata in the last episode. I would love to see Tata go and just get a shot right here, right now. If he's worse than Nix in a bow back to the G League, but I think Nix is not really working for us at this point in time. And so I don't want to see the Eric Gordon, Dacian Nix backcourt lineups no more. I think it's a really bad lineup. And the fact that we don't stagger KPJ and Jalen upsets me. And then I was upset this time with the Sixers game, but with the Warriors game, how Shingle only got 20 minutes. That did kind of upset me. Outside of those things, I think on this, you know, this four game, I wouldn't say four game win streak, we've won four of the last seven. I think he's coached some pretty solid games outside of those Denver games, which, you know, like I said, we have to qualify Silas here. I think he coached two horrible games with Denver, but outside of those, man, I've been impressed, you know? So I'm not going to say the guy is the coach of the future. I'm not saying he should have the job next year. If it was still up to me, I think we'd still be looking in a different direction. But I feel like if we're going to criticize him when he, you know, doesn't coach good games, I have to call it objectively and say he coached a good game last night. And so I don't know, Brad, what you think about Coach Silas yesterday?
Coach Silas, in my opinion, he did coach a good game. You know, again, they started the game extremely poorly. I have a few things with Silas that I would change. Of course, I do want them to start KJ Martin. He played under 20 minutes yesterday. That's the reason I feel like they are having these poor starts. Even though they did have a poor start with KJ in the Golden State game, I think KJ fits better with the starting lineup. The numbers back that up. Outside of that, Will, I would play Ty Washington over Dacian Nix because Dacian Nix looks too sloppy out there. And there's just no reason for him to continue showing the same thing that we've seen the entire season. Ty's been playing really good in the G Leagues. Call him up. Outside of those two things, man, Stephen Silas, I feel like he managed the game extremely well. He called timeouts at the right times. He's making great subs outside of the two that I mentioned. He played Tari more than he was probably going to play. If this was a game earlier in the season and Tari had a great stretch like that, I feel like Silas isn't subbing or, you know, resubbing in, you know, Tari Eason. You know, there's little things like that. And the play call I really liked when the Rockets were going for the win. Even though Kevin Porter Jr. missed that free throw in overtime, I love that play call. It was Jalen Green was cutting across and KPJ just curled to the right side and got a free lane to the basket. I like that play call. It's progression from when they gave it to Eric Gordon. Even though I thought that was a good play call, it was just annoying because EG, we don't want to see EG take the game winner. We want to see a guy like Kevin or a guy like Jalen Green take those game-winning shots. So little things like that. Stephen Silas, he's been impressing me, and I've been liking what I'm seeing. You have to give him credit where credit is due. We're going to give him slack, but again, this is a very young team. EG is your only vet. So to come out there and win four games in the last seven against some good teams, three of those teams were good, is pretty impressive. So I give him his props there.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I'll even say OKC isn't a great team, but they were playing at a pretty, like, they've been playing some solid basketball this year. They've beaten some teams they probably shouldn't have beat. So, as a matter of fact, I guess you could say I was just underrating our team, but I thought we were the underdogs in that OKC game, actually.
Yeah.
To Brad's point, man, I mean, like I said, outside of those few adjustments, outside of those two Denver games, which I think those were the two worst coaches I've ever seen in my entire life, he's been doing pretty good. So, because I got to give him props where credit is due. We got two things I want to talk about real quick. I think these can be some interesting topics of discussion, though. But the tanking discussion, right? So the Rockets have won 4 of their last 7 games, which if you're a fan of a tanking team, if you're a fan of the get Wimby discourse, it's probably not what you wanted to see. You probably want to see us lose a little bit more than we have. And, you know, so I'm going to let Brad give his take, but I wanted to, you know, what I want to talk about here is I want to, like, caution fans from, like, getting too down on the fact that, right, which is kind of funny, like, I'm having to tell people don't get mad that we're winning, right? But this is, you know, we were in a situation last season to end the season where we beat the Blazers when they were, like, in full-fledged tank mode. Like, Dame was done. They traded CJ. They were running, like, their G League team out there. And, like, we beat them twice. Everybody was like, oh, we're not going to get a good pick. You know, we're going to get shout out J-Dub. We're going to get what's my man name in Washington right now?
Johnny Davis.
Johnny Davis. We're going to get Johnny Davis. You know, everybody was freaking out because we won. I'm like, man, like, relax. We just won 2 games. It's not that big of a deal. You know, so I'm going to give that same kind of speech right now. Like, we've won 4 of the last 7, but, like, one, remember how bad we started. And two, like, this is still a young team. Like, if I was a betting man, I'm going to bet and say that we're going to go on, like, another, like, 5-game losing streak at some point in time this season, like, probably relatively soon at that. Like, if you look at our schedule, it's actually pretty tough coming up. So I don't really think that we're going to continue to see this team play at this level. But just so you know, for conversation's sake, we are the 4th worst team in the NBA, which I'm going to pull the odds up right now. Give me 1 second. Yeah, cool. So we are the 4th worst team in the NBA right now with actually, this is saying Tankathon has us at 5, actually. I guess we're tied with the Hornets. Yeah, so maybe we'll pass them up. But the way this works is – actually, I don't know. Now I'm learning something new. Is the fact that we're tied with the Hornets –
it changes the odds.
It changes the odds. I didn't know that.
So Will, when I was posting these, because, you know, with Brooklyn being in the lottery, the Rockets had higher draft odds. And when I was posting it on Twitter, I realized the odds had shifted. Like, I thought it was a set number for the top 3.
I thought it was too.
It does change. Or maybe it's just during the season it does that. But typically, since the Rockets are that 4 spot right now, if they do end up with that 4 spot, they're going to have around a 10% chance to get Wimby.
Which is crazy because right now it's saying 11.5.
11.5.
Wow. It says Tankathon, which I tend to trust Tankathon. They have us and Charlotte tied.
They're trustworthy.
Yeah, they have us tied at 11.5. But to be fair, they are marking us as the 5th seed. So, like, we have a 0.7% chance at the 9th pick in the draft.
Okay.
But the point I was making, you know, the point I was trying to make in the first place is that, like, the rebuild is not, like, done, or, like, we're not going to get a bad pick per se because we won these games in December. Mm-hmm. There's still a really good chance that we're going to start losing some games again. Like, I don't really have that much faith this team's going to go on, like, in the same win streak. And we talk about this a lot on the podcast, but the team that finishes with the worst record in the NBA has yet to, like, under these new lottery odds, has yet to get the number one pick. Like, we finished with the worst record 2 consecutive years, and now we have to show for this pick 2, which was Jalen Green. So, like, Let's relax, man. Like, nothing, this is not over with. It's not done. There's no need to hit the panic button because of games 1 in December. Let's have this discussion in March. And, you know, maybe there's a little bit more validity to it then. But I still, at this point in time, don't think this team's going to win more than 25, 27 games anyways. So let's caution that. But you know, y'all know how I am. If we somehow do win more than 27, I am not going to complain. So Brad, what's your take on this the tanking discourse right now?
So I feel like we've had this conversation in the offseason, and my stance is the same as it was in the offseason. If this Rockets team can come out there and overcompete, and I'm not saying play-in. This team is obviously not about to make the play-in. I'm talking about just a team that is like a 13 seed, maybe like the 6th, 7th worst team. If I see a leap with this team, like development-wise, and it look like they can take a step next season, because as we've mentioned before, the Rockets – need to have a good record next season. They don't have their first round pick. It's top 4 protected. If I could see a leap, you know, and they just start winning games, I'm okay with that. Because, one, if they're going to be bad, then, okay, please give me Victor Wembanyama. But, like, if I see progression, I'm okay with that. Because we have a lot of young players on this team. And if these guys progress, then this team is going to take a huge leap. You know, we see Jalen already making a leap. We see Jabari, even after his first few games, he's looking like the guy who was drafted at number 3. You know, just little things like that. If these guys can start compiling wins together, I think it's just lame to be like, oh man, I wish we weren't winning these games, because then if it were the other way around, you would be complaining, fire Silas this, fire Silas that. You know, we got to be consistent here. You know, if this team is winning games, we can't complain. You have to be happy with the progression this team has shown. So, Will, last thing I will say on this topic, this is a stacked draft class. You will see Victor Wembanyama and pray that we get him, as we all do. That's the greatest prospect of all time, in my opinion. Of course, I'm going to pray that we get him. I'll pray that we get Scoot. But outside of those two, this top 10 is stacked. They have guys like Anthony Black, who looks absurd, 6'7 point guard. His backcourt teammate, Nick Smith Jr., looks amazing. Amen Thompson, Cam Whitmore. I can go down the line. Keontae George.
You got his brother, Oswald Thompson. Like, he's looking really good right now, too.
This is a draft class. These Rockets are going to come out of here with another really good prospect, regardless of the progression they show this season, because they're still going to finish as a bottom tier team, even if they do win too many games, whatever we think that is. So I can't complain. This team, go out there and win some games, show some promise, and go out there and make the play-in next year. That's what I want to see.
No, I think you raised a really good point that I do want to touch on real quickly. Is like, this is the one draft where if you get the third or fourth, fifth pick, like, you're still walking away with a really good basketball
even
player.
Like the eighth pick, man.
They have Oswald Thompson and Keontae George as the 7th, 8th best prospect right now, which is like, those are two. Go ahead.
Another guy I didn't even mention, GG Jackson, number one player in ESPN.
I've never heard of him before.
You never heard of him? Will, I'll send you a video after this. He reclassified into this draft class coming up. He was number one player, and he was supposed to get drafted in 2024. This kid is like 6'9", 6'10", with handles, shifty.
What position
does
he play?
He's like 6'9", 6'10". He's like a power forward. But even – I'm just saying, it's so stacked that, you know, the Rockets can get a guy that they want. Like, they have so many guys. Like, it's
– yeah. Absurd. And I was going to say, like, the guy who goes, like, number 3 or 4 in this class might have been the number one pick a year ago. So, like, that should tell you how deep and how historic this draft class at least projects to be. And so, like, once again, I'm definitely not going to be tripping. I mean, obviously, everybody wants Wemby. Everybody wants Scoot. But – if the worst case scenario is Mr. Amen Thompson, like, you will not see me complaining about that on draft night. So yeah. Just want to caution everybody on the overreactions and the pity parties. It's not over with, guys. And then the last thing I'll talk about before we close it out, this is I want to, like, take the reins on this one. But because I know you were somebody who talked about this on Twitter the other day. But I'm just saying, should James Harden come back? You know, that's something that everybody's saying is a free agent this year. He talked about how much he loved the city still, how much he loved the team still. He talked about how he was practicing with the guys in the offseason. And then, like, in his postgame press, he was still singing praises for the city and for the team. Let me say this, too, before I let you pass it off to Brad. I don't think James Harden's coming back, like, at all. But for the sake of content, should James Harden come back?
For the sake of content, we are going to discuss this. And Will, I'm going to say the same thing. I do not think James is coming back, and I only think he would come back if he won a ring. And even if he did win a ring, I'd assume that he'd want to win more rings.
Yeah.
But he's not coming unless he gets a ring. You know, similar to situation to LeBron, who met the Cleveland, he already got his ring. But now, James, come back to Houston. You know, this team, and I'll get a lot of pushback for this, and it's fine because, you know, the opinion on James Harden is 50-50, in my opinion, with Houston fans. You either hate him for leaving, he's a quitter, this, that, and the third, or, oh, you know, that's the second greatest player in franchise history. I'd be cool with having him back. For me, my reason for being okay with James coming back is it's just a little deeper than that. You know, this is a young team. They were the worst team in the league 2 years in a row. This year, they're pretty bad. And when you watch, you could tell that they lack a floor general. I like Kevin Porter Jr. He's not a floor general. He could be a point guard, but being a floor general is very rare in the NBA. There are a few floor generals in the league. We have an emerging star, Tyrese Haliburton. That is what a floor general looks like. That's what James Harden is. A guy that can get these guys into their spots, direct the offense around. And I feel like James Harden at this stage of his career, yes, he's still a durable kind of guy. We saw it last night too. But if you really watch the beginning of that game, Joel Embiid got hurt, and they didn't go to him as much towards the end of the game. But James is a facilitator at heart, and I saw it in the last game and throughout this entire season. He averages 10 assists for a reason. His points per game are down to 22. If he were to come to this Houston team, this is where I feel like they would benefit. James is not going to come out there and be that 30-point, a night kind of guy, taking all the threes, everybody standing in a corner. This isn't going
to be who he is anymore.
It's not who he is anymore. He's not 2018, 2019 James Harden, where these guys aren't getting a touch unless they get a catch and shoot opportunity from James. James is a facilitator. He is. He's always been that. But he's that times three now because he's not that scorer that he used to be. And I would like that for this young court. Look at Tyrese Maxey. Tyrese Maxey looks extremely good, extremely efficient next to James Harden. Just look at his numbers. Guys like Tobias Harris having one of the best years of his career. Joel Embiid, you know, it's James is going to help this young court a lot. I feel like Jabari would be perfect next to James, especially Jalen Green. Jalen Green and Jabari are top two priorities, Will, and they're going to be a lot better next to a guy like James Harden. That's how I look at it. If you want to look at it like, man, Brad, no, because he left, he walked out on this team. I don't want to give him all this money. Well, the Rockets have the most cap space in the league. Giving him a 1+1 deal isn't that big of an issue because they're still going to have a lot of cap space. They could mess around and have close to 2 max slots this year. So money really isn't an issue in that regard. And those are the two biggest, you know, issues that I've seen. People think that he's just going to be the priority. He's going to take away looks from these guys. That's not going to happen. The main pushbacks I've been hearing for Harden to come is that he left and I don't want him back and he's going to take up too much money and he's going to take away from the development. Those three things I see as false. And that's why I'm okay with him coming. I don't think it's realistic, as we've touched on, Will, but I don't really see the pushback for it. He would help this young core. We've been bad for 2 years, 3 years now in a row, and we need to make a play-in next year, and you're going to make a play-in with James Harden. It doesn't mean he's got to be there long-term or even for the championship push, but he's going to help get these guys to the playoffs, and you grow from there. I don't know how – I don't know. People are going to say that's crazy. Let us know in the comments what y'all think. Say, if I'm tripping, let me know. I'd love to hear, and we can chop it up in the comments. But, Will, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, so I do want to start off by once again saying I don't think he's coming back next year. I think the reason James Harden left in the first place was because we weren't good enough to win a championship, and the Rockets right now were maybe about at the best like 4 or 5 years away. Like that's speaking like everything goes the way it's supposed to go. We're about 4 years away from that, so obviously not. He may not even be in the NBA 4 years from now, right? So as he kind of starts winding down his career, he wants to ring chase. He wants to get a championship. That's like the only thing his resume is missing. He got MVPs, All-NBA, All-Stars. Only thing he's missing is that championship. So I don't think he's going to come back to Houston because he needs a championship to like solidify his legacy. And so like to Brad's point, if he wins a championship this year in Philadelphia, I don't think he's coming back because like why stop at one? Go get two, you know what I'm saying? Like try to run it back. And if he doesn't win a championship this year in Philadelphia, I don't think that's going to be – I don't think he's going to give up the ring-chasing quest after – what has it been, like 2 seasons without James Harden? We're going on 3 now. Yeah. I don't think he's going to give it up, you know, give up the ring-chasing quest that fast or that easily considering he doesn't have much time left. Like, I think it's more likely that he'll just go ring-chase. You know, he signs a crazy minimum deal to go play like the Clippers or something like that. Like, I think he would go ring-chase before he comes back to Houston. So, to that point, like I said, I don't think he's coming back. But for the sake of content, for the sake of the conversation – I'm indifferent to James Harden coming back, right? Like if he comes back, cool. If he doesn't come back, cool. You know, like I think Brad brings up a good point. I don't subscribe to the idea that James Harden hurts us in any way. Like I don't think that our team is going to be negatively impacted, especially when you consider the fact that this team is going to be looking different next season, whether it's James Harden or not. Like this team, the Rockets we're looking at right now, I mean, there might be maybe 5-6 guys who like for sure will be here next season. Everybody else, like you're still playing for your spot because talking on the show a lot, we don't own our pick next year. So to some capacity, they want to be competitive. And so there's a lot of ways you can upgrade this roster, a lot of, you know, trades you can make. We still have like Brad said, the 2 max slots. We have the Brooklyn picks still, you know, can hit. We still have our own draft picks. We can kind of move here and there. This seems to look a lot different. So when you factor in that, like in some capacity, we're going to have to improve this team somehow. Like I agree. Like, I don't think that James Harden's going to negatively impact us. I think he does make Jalen Green and Jabari Smith's jobs a lot easier. Like, I can just imagine the pick and pop game with Jabari and James Harden. Like, that would probably be, like, insane. So, yeah, like he's not the 2018, 2019 James Harden that was 20 dribbles a possession, setback 3. Like, he only does that these days out of necessity. But, like, if you watch the game against Sixers last night, like, his thing was, I'm getting Joel Embiid the ball. That's what James Harden did. So, like, I don't really think he's going to come back here, especially as he continues to age, that he's going to come back and be super ball dominant and think it's, you know, it's me first. No, I think he would understand like what he's coming back for. And I got some pushback for this in the space yesterday, but I don't think it's outside the realm possibility that like next season, Jalen Green's a better basketball player than James Harden anyway. So like, it's so many that like the best player gets the most touches. I think it would still be Jalen, right? Like I think Jalen could be the best player on the team if James Harden was here, right? And so, yeah, man, like if he comes back, cool. If he doesn't, and we spend that money somewhere else, or, you know, we make a trade here or there, there's, you know, this is for another day, but there's the whatever's going on with Atlanta with Trae Young that, you know, me and Brett were talking about, like, who knows, man, there might be a guy like that who becomes disgruntled this offseason, and like maybe we move our assets and our cap space for a guy like that, like, who knows. But so, like, to answer the question, I'm indifferent to it. It's kind of just whatever happens. I guess it would be really cool if like we did draft Wimby. I think like signing James Harden for me would go up a lot more, because I need to see Wimby play with a guy like we saw James Harden make Capella look an all-star, bro. Can you imagine what he's gonna do with Wimby? So
look, Will, you saw what he did with Christian Wood in those very few games. You know, Christian Wood looked like a for sure all-star next to James Harden. So just wait until I guess you can't wait, but just imagine if Wimby was playing next to facilitating James. Yeah, that's must-see basketball.
But
yeah.
Yeah, but no, that's all to say about James Harden potentially coming back. Like Brad said, we do play the Spurs on Thursday, which is a game that we should win, but those are also the games the Rockets sometimes lose. So I need them to come into Thursday's game with the folks that they are the underdog, that they are, you know, they're not supposed to win this game, and they treated the Sixers game like they treated the Suns game, and they should walk away with a convincing victory. As a matter of fact, it's going to be pretty bad discourse if we lose that game, so I need them to treat it like it's a championship night almost. But Brian, anything else you want to say as far as the show goes Thursday?
Yeah, so going back, I was going to bring up two stats. The first one, the San Antonio game, I said Şengün had 11 5 3 5 6 from the field. I got that right, but it was 13 points. That was the only thing I got wrong. So it was 13 points. But outside
of that, isn't that what you said though? I think that's what you said.
I thought I said 11. If I said 13, we'll go back.
Said 13.
Yeah, but outside of that, Jalen Green in games where he hit one or less three-point shots last year, he was awful. He only had two games of those 19 that turned out to be efficient. But overall, he shot, 13% from three in those games, 34% from the field, and only averaged 11 points. So for him to go out there yesterday
– I'm sorry. How many games was that? Did he do that?
19.
Yeah. So, yeah, I told you my eye test was right.
Yeah, averaged 12 a game. It was shooting terrible. In that last game that we saw – in overtime against the Sixers, 27 points, right? Over 7 from 3. It just shows the growth from Jalen Green. But that's the last thing I want to say. But yeah, as my outro, you can always find me on Instagram and Twitter at BradoNBA. Make sure to tap in there. And that's all I got, man. I appreciate you guys for tuning into the show. Make sure to subscribe if you're still listening, of course. And yeah, this was a fun episode. It's good to see the Rockets get some wins. It's a lot better talking on these podcasts after some wins. So yeah. Feel good. Yeah.
And as always, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Bryce Houston. Continue to show love to the Brider on Will's socials and on YouTube as well. And with that, we will see you guys next week. Hopefully, we have some more interesting games to talk about.
Hopefully.
Peace.
Yeah, peace.